Hey, it's Millie, and welcome to the Generalist World podcast. This is a show where I interview people from the Generalist World community, and we talk things like the future of work, careers, predictions, their hot takes, and really understand what their squealy careers have looked like. So if you're a generalist who feels like they're living in a specialized world, this is the podcast for you.
Hey, Zach, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great. And I don't know if we even covered the basic rises. R-E-I-Z-E-S, last name. Like, we didn't even talk about that.
Zach, and now I'm like... Rises. I thought you were telling me, like, an acronym or something. Like, R stands for ready. E stands for excited. You know?
I'm into it.
Yeah.
No, I just realized we didn't even talk about my last name, which can be tricky.
We got Zach Rises. And so, Millie Tamati. Everyone calls me Tamati. But in New Zealand and Māori, it's always you put the emphasis on the first syllable. So we're all learning.
I didn't know that. Oh, no. I'm glad. Oh, this is a good start to a conversation. We're right before I hit, you hit record. I said we barely know one another at all.
Which is funny. It's funny because we have had multiple conversations now because we are scheming on something very, very cool that's going to be happening in April. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the juice throughout this episode. But I wanted to tee people up. I wanted to give people the foundation. And so if someone has never heard of you, Zach Rises, if they're just tuning in for the first time, why should they listen to this episode? What do you reckon we might cover? What's some of the juice that Zach will be bringing to this episode today?
First of all, I appreciate that if someone has never heard of me. That was a very, very cleverly. The answer is for everybody who's listening who has no idea who I am, I will answer that question. And before I answer the question, you asked for just the juice. Like, what are we going to talk about? Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about event planning in like the most accessible way possible. We're going to talk about how to approach social media. And I'm going to tell you, Millie, how much I love LinkedIn and why. And I know you love LinkedIn, but seriously, I've got this whole, like, I need to write a college level essay around how much I love LinkedIn. And actually, that's going to dovetail into talking about the Slowdown Summit, because there is a through line there that all comes together in this thesis that I love. And of course, we'll probably crack some jokes along the way, I imagine.
We'll probably have just a sprinkle of fun. Not too much.
Just
though.
A little bit.
Not too much.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
So tell me, Zach, can you give folks a bit of an overview, a flavor of your background? What does your background look like to getting this idea to be like, I want to create this really accessible event? What is the link there? How does that work?
If I was quicker on my feet, I'd love to make a joke about being really, really specifically good about one small thing. And then you could just be like, then why the hell are you part of Generalist World? But the honest answer is, like pretty much everybody else who is inside the GW community, who follows you on your various social media platforms, I'm one of those people that's done a little bit of a lot of things. That's not a secret for those of us who have bought into the cult of being a generalist. I've done operations at lobbying and advocacy firm for several years that I started with a business partner. I have worked internally at several nonprofits. I've started several nonprofit 501c3 organizations. I've helped grow a co-working space in the small town that I lived in for almost a decade. And along the way, I've also built and then like shoved out of the nest events. So if I had to describe my area of specification and specialty, which I do sometimes have to do, usually at like a holiday party or a networking event, I always say that the area that I've done the best in is when someone has an idea or a problem, they don't know how to start it or fix it. And they just kind of look at me with like panic in their eyes. They're like, help. And then I'll work with them for, 6 to 8 months. And then we'll just get it to the point where the idea or the problem solved or the idea is being shoved out of the nest. And that's when I like to step away. Maybe it's my like, internal attention deficit disorder, but I love being able to hop between different projects. And I do really well when I can code switch between big ideas and get lost in that sauce of creation.
Can we underline something there? Because one of the things that I've lost count, maybe every generalist struggles with, is the so what do you do question. And they go, okay, well, I'm an event planner, and then I was a consultant, and then I started a nonprofit. And it's like this like chronological, and the person listening is like, I did not follow. But what you just did there is something I have not heard before. I am at my best when, fill in the blanks, and then that's when I step away. Beautiful. I am at my best when, fill in the blank, and that is when I step away. That's a really awesome, I don't know if that was an intentional thing that you just did, but I think people could kind of copy paste that template and it would be really helpful.
I have played around with this phrasing, like you said, like as every generalist does, right? Like, what is it that you do? Word vomit or just freeze, right? I've played around with having that elevator pitch down, and that elevator pitch also takes into account knowing when I'm done with my job. Like, I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. And so I like in the same breath, being able to say, like, I'm really good at this. And it helps to frame, instead of framing, like, I do accounting, but I don't do English, I do ideation and strategy, but I am not going to be your data manager. Mm-hmm. And that still helps draw a box around the thing that I do, maybe just in a non-traditional way.
And has it always been obvious to you, or do you have a mental model for thinking about understanding what are you good at and what are you not good at? Because I know that sounds really obvious and it sounds like something we should inherently know, but I actually don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Dr. Gay Hendricks' book, The Big Leap, I think it's called, or The Great Leap. I think it's The Big Leap. And there's multiple sort of modalities that are talked about through that book from start to finish. I listened to it as an audiobook when I was in a period of transition in my professional life about 2 years ago. And one of the things that Dr. Hendricks talks about is finding your zone of genius, which is, you know, above your zone of competence or even your zone of excellence, right? Zone of competence being, I can do this. Zone of excellence being the people around me are telling me I'm really good at this, so I should keep doing it more. Mm-hmm. The zone of genius is, you know, that, to bring in a completely different model, it's that ikigai, right? It's where you find that flow and recognition of, oh, I'm good at this and I like doing it and it makes sense to me. And one of the hardest things has been, gosh, I feel like this is, once again, just not going to be a surprise to any generalist who's listening, is sometimes that thing that you're best at, you don't even know you're good at it because it feels so easy that you're like, that's not a skill. And it does take some thinking and reflecting to recognize that we all have innate strengths. Mm-hmm. And if you've gone through X number of years of life building on the thing you were already strong at, that means you're really, really good at it, especially compared to the rest of the general population.
Plus one. And I will also add a sprinkling of, ask your friends, ask your partner, ask the boss who knows you best. I had this exact thing happen just this week when I was DMing or chatting with my friend Nikita, who used to work with us at GW. And I was talking about this thing that I was doing at work, and I was like, yeah, you know, it's pretty good. And she had to like stop me and be like, Millie, let's call this what it is. Like, this is the zone of genius that you don't even see it. And I actually, I literally stopped in my tracks. I was on a walk, which is also a shock to no one because I'm constantly walking. And I was like, oh, it took someone else to reflect that back to me, to kind of be the mirror, that then I could see the actual value of it, where I, you know, just kind of take it for granted.
Well, I will add that I actually have a great story about asking your friends, because when I was in the middle of this aforementioned period of transition in my life, I put together a self-assessment form and had my partner, Brooke, like lead me as a like peer mentor through a self-assessment, which included sending out this Google form to not like necessarily just professionals in my life, but a wide range of friends, family, former bosses, etc., asking all of these candid questions, like, you know, would you describe me on a scale of 1 to 5 as more open or more skeptical, more humble or more bold, more generous or more strict? And I collected 20 responses, and then I'm not ashamed to admit, because I think this is a great use of the platform, I fed that into ChatGPT, and I said, what does all of this data tell you about me? And that was also really informative, because it helped me understand how others see me in this time period where I was like, I don't even know how I see myself right now.
Was there anything that you're comfortable, if you're comfortable sharing, that was particularly surprising in that data?
Surprising, no. You know, I did ask very bluntly, and this was an anonymous survey, so I don't know who said what, but I asked about my weaknesses, and I said, what position would you not recommend me for? And I think people read me really clearly as not being someone who should be scheduling for other people necessarily. I manage my own calendar very specifically, and I don't like other people managing my calendar, but I should not do that to others. I think, you know, folks really said, like, he shouldn't be doing anything too isolated, whether it's on a team or in a community. Like, I know about myself that I thrive when I'm working with other people who can respond to my ideas, point out where my blind spots are. I really relish working in a team. I always find teams to bring around me, even if it's a solo project. And that came through really loud and clear in those results. Mm.
And okay, last question, because this is fascinating. How did you come up with the questions to ask?
Oh my gosh. I'd have to take the Wayback Machine. And by that, I mean, like, I don't know, dive through my inbox. But I think I like pillaged from a lot of like Myers-Briggs-esque assessments to pick the questions I most wanted the answers to, all with an eye towards understanding whether people saw me as being X as I see myself, and then wanting to like either adjust to focus on a weakness where people are like, oh, he's not good at that. I'm like, oh, well, I want to be known for being a good communicator, for example. Or if, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, if something, you know, showed up as being like, Zach thinks he's really good or is really good or is perceived as being talented at Y, like, that's not where I want to invest my time. That would tell me where to back off. So that was really the inspiration. But I'm sure there was a little bit more method to the madness. It was still madness, Millie. Like, it was still madness.
Because what I'm thinking, idea, shocker, yeah, again, to no one, have an idea. I think that if you're comfortable, we should create this as just like a Google Doc template that people can make a copy. We can add it to the show notes of this episode, and people can go and actually do it for themselves and then share with us on socials.
Yeah.
What came up? What was surprising? What did you learn about yourself? I think that's a really amazing, amazing tool.
I bet that there's a way to not only do that, but to then like have Lovable automatically like translate it into some kind of GW template. Pause for this podcast is brought to you by Lovable, proud sponsor of Generalist World. Shout out to Lovable. We
Shout
love
out.
You guys.
Hey, MP. Hey, Sophia.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's pin that and we can jam afterwards. So you said at the beginning that you love LinkedIn. That is a sentence that not many people have uttered through their mouth. That is something that is perhaps the opposite of what a lot of people think. People, I think it's a very common thing to think that LinkedIn is cringe, LinkedIn is awful, LinkedIn is like a chore. But you and I are in a different camp because for the most part, there is parts of LinkedIn that irk me, of course. But for the most part, it has been, without being dramatic, like quite a life-changing platform to be a part of. So, Zach, give me your pitch. Why do you love LinkedIn?
Oh my gosh. This is the first time I'm talking about this on a platform. And I haven't even posted on LinkedIn about this, but the post is coming. And this is really a thesis that arose from my conversation with Andrew Roth, who is the founder of a company called DCDX and another company called Offline. DCDX does Gen Z insights research, and Offline helps connect brands with in real life community. And teasing, we'll talk about the Slowdown Summit in a few minutes here. Andrew's going to speak right before you at the Slowdown Summit. So my conversation with Andrew, where we're discussing his speaking role at the summit we're putting together, we were discussing this, you know, trend that everyone's sort of aware of at this point, this shift from online to offline engagement. And he brought up how there was this great promise of a social media that was here to connect us, right? And there's some Mark Zuckerberg quote from, you know, 2011 that's truly about how the promise of Facebook is a future where we're all connected. You fast forward to today, and it's very easy to see that the vast majority of social medias are not connection economies, but attention economies. You know, the focus is not on getting you and I to connect with one another. It's to get you and I to stay on the platform for as long as possible, to see as many ads as possible. LinkedIn, I would argue, is the only major social media platform that is built around a connection economy, both because the way that the algorithm sort of functions is by promoting posts that are liked and commented on by people in your network. So it's expanding your network. And then by promoting tools that are focused on engagement and outreach between people. And actually, like, we've seen that advertising's fallen flat on LinkedIn. Like, advertising is not easy to pull off on LinkedIn because the algorithm just really doesn't support it in the way it supports human-derived and human-made content. Now, that's not to say like big social media platforms are all good. LinkedIn is farming our data. But from a health of my engagement and my relation to it as a social media, I meet, make, and stay in touch with friends on that platform so much more easily than I do on one that is designed to just become a black hole for my brain. So that's sort of my thesis, is that it's the only platform where the incentives are aligned with the outcomes that I personally want. And then the other little like humble plug is the LinkedIn you all remember from like 2014 or whenever LinkedIn originated is not the LinkedIn of today. The silly geese have arrived and we are taking over. And it just like, if you want to be a human on that platform, you don't have to engage with or be bombarded by like the B2B SaaS tech bros. You really don't. And you can just be you, and there are people for you there. So for all these reasons, I'm an unequivocal fan. And like you've referenced, Millie, sorry for the monologue. It's been a really powerful platform for me to be a part of.
Strong thesis. And I hadn't actually really seen it from that perspective, but I think you're right. This is, I guess I maybe inherently knew this, but I hadn't had the language or hadn't nailed it so explicitly, where I've often said that, like, for me, TikTok, I say there's no loyalty. There's no loyalty on TikTok. It's just like out to the algos. I think 95% of people who see my stuff aren't following me. It's just like pushed out to new people. Where LinkedIn is the opposite. I have what feels like the same kind of 20 people, which like I love. They're like my 20 pals, it feels like, on LinkedIn, and we all like hype each other up. So I totally hear you. So strong thesis. Next question is, what about strategy? Do you have a strategy? What is the strategy? And also, what hasn't worked for you?
I feel like the only strategy that is perennial on LinkedIn is knowing that complaining about LinkedIn on LinkedIn will get pulls. I mean, the, you know, gods behind the machine up there at LinkedIn HQ, they're always toying with the algorithm. We're just pawns. So I hesitate, in the interest of being evergreen with my advice, I hesitate to say that any one thing's working right now, because we've seen that changes overnight. Someone flips a switch, dials something up, dials something down. I adhere to the very tried and true advice that you want to build your network before you need your network. And LinkedIn is a way to do that without having to show up physically at the networking events and while being able to reach a wider audience in a remote work economy. So not as much for me to say on content. I mean, my content, I've got one thing to say on content. If you are looking for content and you don't know what to say, just brag about the cool people that you do know. It's an easy way to show your face by taking a selfie, to tag somebody who possibly has a larger audience than you, and then you're riding their audience algorithmic coattails. And it's a great way to be like, look at the cool things that I'm involved in because I know this person who's doing this thing. And for the first year that I was really active on LinkedIn, I think the vast majority of my posts were me posting about the coffee chats I was having. And that slowly morphed into being more and more focused on my projects or my big ideas. So if there's a way that you want to get started, just arrange some coffees, take a selfie. Oh my God, I had this awesome coffee chat with this awesome person doing this awesome thing. That tells the people who see it what you are interested in. And it's feel good, which means you're not contributing to a vortex of like, everything is off.
Boom. Such helpful advice. I kind of think of LinkedIn, well, any social media platform, as your like your digital footprint, as your sphere of influence. And so if Millie has a sphere of influence and Zach has a sphere of influence, by connecting them, as you said, it's like riding the wave, riding the algo wave. It's signaling that, oh, I'm in this sphere as well. And there'd be like, it's like a Venn diagram. It's like, there's an overlap here. So if you like Millie's stuff, you're probably going to like my stuff as well. And why wouldn't you? Like, I absolutely plus one this advice. As if you look at that LinkedIn screen, it's blank and it's like, write something cool. What are you going to post today? It's like, absolutely lift someone else up. Fantastic strategy.
Yeah. Seriously, there are days where I just go to my camera roll and look at the last 30 days. I'm like, oh, that was really fun. I should tell other people about that. Yeah, it's a great low lift way to be engaged in the conversation without feeling the pressure of like, I have nothing to say about, you know, this new VC deal or whatever the hell you're comparing yourself to, which just stop comparing yourself anyway.
It's the thief of joy, comparison.
Sure is. Sure is.
All right, Zach, we got to do it. We got to shift gears.
Hard pivot. Let's go.
Yeah. Thanks, LinkedIn. We're going on to the Slowdown Summit. Gosh, there are so many different angles we could start with here. I guess for people who may have not heard of it, what's the origin? Why does the Slowdown Summit even exist?
Once again, for all the people who definitely have not heard of it, the Slowdown Summit is a brand new leadership development conference that I'm organizing with two business partners. The intention of the summit is to create a leadership development space that is built around the learning needs of introverted and neurodivergent learners. The whole idea being, actually call back to when we talked about how generalists can often be defined by what they're not as opposed to what they are. It's sometimes easier, although it's not my favorite framing in the world, to explain the Slowdown Summit by explaining what it's not. So usually I start by saying, this is not a fast-paced, shake-all-the-hands-you-can networking event. This is not going to be a loud, overstimulating environment. And it's not going to be a place where you're sitting there in an uncomfortable plastic chair, listening to a group of ill-prepared, usually white men, riff into a microphone. That's like the cheapest, lowest budget, lowest effort way to put together an event. What we're doing is we're redesigning the leadership development conference by asking, what are our goals? Who's our audience? And then what are the ways to help our audience meet those goals most effectively? So very, very briefly, right? We define the three leadership outcomes of any kind of leadership development event to be skill building, network building, and confidence building. Just to say this again, right? You want to go to an event where you're building hard skills, you're meeting people who expand your network, and you build confidence in yourself and your leadership capacity. Well, for some people, that's going to be accomplished by a loud, overstimulating, fast-paced environment. For the vast majority of us, that kind of traditional, air quotes, leadership development environment is really unacceptable because I'm kind of on a high horse about this. But we'll just say it is not helpful or conducive to those goals. So if those are our goals, skill building, relationship building, and confidence building, what does it look like to design a conference around that goals and that audience? This is a question that we've asked. So again, sort of a long walk to get to this answer. Our conference is going to provide learning opportunities in a multimodal learning context. So we're thinking through the visual, kinesthetic, and auditory learning capabilities and opportunities throughout the day. We're going to have multiple micro and macro opportunities for pause and reflection, so you can really let what you just heard sink into your brain and then can sort of check a box and move on to the next big idea. You're not being bombarded again and again and again without pause. And then really the cornerstone of the summit is safety and agency, helping ensure that our attendees are psychologically safe and physically safe when they walk into the room, and helping them know that they've got agency to be there or not be there as they so choose. That alone, right, and it's very tied to a Maslow's hierarchy of needs kind of mentality, that alone creates this learning bedrock that will allow everyone to engage with the big ideas we're going to explore on more equal footing, which should culminate in a really powerful day that meets the goals I just repeated like several times. Yeah, a deep breath.
If that is not the most refreshing, needed thing that I have heard, I mean, for folks who don't know, because they've not been in my office with me, Zach and I have been talking about this, and also Juliet, for many, many months now. And when they came to me maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago, and they told me this idea, it was, we didn't even know the details. Like, this is like incredible, the details you've got to. But it was an immediate yes from me. I was like, sign me up. I have been to so many conferences. I've now spoken at a lot of conferences, and I can see the patterns that just aren't working. And it is so clear that there is something else that's needed. And I just want to really shout out and give kudos to your founding team, who is putting I say this with love, an absurd amount of detail, like an absurd amount of care and love and thought, and you're sweating the small stuff. And that is why I'm so proud to put my name to this and coming all the way across from Scotland to be involved with this, because I just think it's going to be an exceptional day and the start of something huge.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, seriously, your vote of confidence, it means a lot to us, right? And you're one of the first voices we approached. Juliet and I were on the same page immediately. We're like, if Millie responds to this damn DM, which you did so fast, then we're like, we need Millie on this stage because, and I know this is the generalist world pod, right? Like the overlap between being a generalist, being neurodivergent, being introverted, or just being interested in human first and accessible leadership is so strong. That, you know, to tie together your area of built expertise and what we're building, we're like, this is the perfect overlap for our audience, especially as we work into the back end of our day where we're really going to be thinking about the world outside of the room that we're in. Let me say, outside of the art museum that we're in, because we're literally buying out an entire art museum to host this summit in. It's going to be the coolest conference. Thanks also for referencing that we are sweating the small stuff, because this is something I really want to emphasize. The way to do leadership development better is not to make one big change. We had somebody who made a joke, well, are you just going to do leadership development in a sauna? I'm like, well, that sounds awesome, actually, but it's not. It's not the, no, like we're making a 100 micro changes that we think are going to add up to something better. And then, because this is all an experiment, we want to distill that down into these high impact, low cost design changes that we can then share with event organizers and event planners all over the world to help make events and leadership development, both as separate arenas that sometimes come together, more accessible, intentional, and impactful for everyone. That's the goal.
So needed. And you guys are the team to do it. I've spent quite a few hours now jamming with you, brainstorming with you, and you're just an all-star team. And if folks are interested, if you're listening to this and your spidey senses are going off, check it out, slowdownsummit.co. Edja and I are going to be coming over. I think we're both going to be flying from Edinburgh, and it is going to be a grand meeting of the generalists of the US. I haven't been to the US for a couple of years now, so I'm so excited to meet and see so many of our generalist community in person.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. I am unabashedly taking credit for being the reason that we're getting the generalist worlds together. As like a little bit of an unexpected side quest here, you being in the same room, Edja being there, Sarah coming from Boston, Sarah's purchased her ticket, a bunch of GW community members. I don't want to start naming names because otherwise I'm going to forget people. I'm going to feel really bad. But if you're active in the GW community, this is going to be where the GW community is meeting up. So you might as well just pull the trigger and come and join us in late April. I should say April 27th, the Columbus, Ohio Museum of Art. Millie, you already plugged the website, slowdownsummit.co. Tickets are live now, so we'd love to have you there.
Epic. And we'll link. So if you're like, wait, I missed the URL. Don't worry. It's all going to be linked in the show notes. Okay. Two more questions that are on my mind. One is around predictions and where you see the world, particularly maybe not the world, because the world is going in some pretty wonky ways at the moment. Let's get to the world of work so where do you see the world of work heading? Do you have any spicy predictions for, say, over the next 12 months?
I love the opportunity for a spicy prediction because I sometimes feel like I'm really bad at being controversial, and controversial gets eyes, Millie. I think that there's this movement towards IRL in real life engagement. People are aware of that. They're talking about that. I think this push-pull tension between remote work and return to office continues. You know, I don't want to like bring our conversation down, but you know, there's definitely like a global economic correction that feels like it's looming that we're all scared about. I'm scared about it. I'm sure you are too. So, I mean, there's a lot of change afoot that I don't feel like I've got new things to add, but I do have one thought, which is that if I had to put my like stake in the ground to wage a battle, to like stand on my hilltop and fight for this till the day I die, it will be the following. We are thinking about AI so wrong. Everyone under the sun, but I'm specifically talking at the middle managers and C-suite leaders of the world who think about AI and then immediately hear or talk about or discuss the ways in which that will make your employees more productive, is completely the opposite message of what we should be taking away from AI, which is that artificial intelligence holds the promise of allowing us to do less work or the same amount of work in less time, not more work in the same amount of time. So rather than having one employee who's doing more in their 8-hour day or their 40-hour work week, I really believe that AI should be allowing that same employee to work 20 hours and then with the same pay, clock out and go make music, spend time with their family, be part of their community, do the things that humans were meant to do, right? Like there's a utopia, dystopia divergence here, right? And that dystopian divergence is the one that we're heading down. And I don't mean geopolitically. You asked about work. So like, I really believe that from a work perspective, we have the choice as a society, whether or not we use these powerful new robots these automation tools, this artificial intelligence to allow us to be more human or to suck all the humanity out of our daily existence? And why not allow us to be more human? That's literally what it's there for, because it's not human. So I wrote about this. You said I could plug, so I'll plug my name, zachrises.com. I write some essays sometimes. I have an essay about this, and it's all about like fucking off to the south of France to paint and just relax. And I really have felt very strongly that we're not talking enough about the fact that that's really what it should be for.
Zach, I love that you're like, sorry, I got nothing spicy. And then you come and drop the spice.
Is it spicy? I don't know. Is that spicy? You tell me. I don't know.
I think it was just the right amount of warmth.
Great. Just a perfect amount of heat. I've been watching a lot of Great British Baking Show. I feel like I just, like, if you're Paul Hollywood, I feel like you just told me that I nailed the heat in my pastry. So thank you for that.
Nailed it. Yep. Okay, Zach, is there anything that I haven't asked you? Anything that you're like, I got the mic. People are still listening. They're tuned in. They're excited about this conversation. I will regret not saying this to the people. Anything I've missed?
To the people. In an interview, I always like to ask, do you have any hesitations about my qualifications for this role? So that's what I'd be asking you, Millie. Do you have any? Because it feels like an interview. But actually, yes, I will close by saying that I've done a lot of thinking about a lot of the things we just talked about, including but not limited to going all the way back to the beginning, right? What it means to be a generalist and having a generalist skill set. And when I'm asked about the things that make me a successful generalist, and I've been a consultant basically since I graduated from college, it's working well for me. I love working for myself, but it is hard. It can be lonely. The finances cannot make sense. Health insurance in the United States is a mess. I like to cite two things, and this is the wisdom that I'd want to give anyone who is a budding generalist or is struggling with their self-employment, whatever it is. The first is that passion is so sexy. If you are just passionate about things in general, and not just your own things, but what other people are doing, everyone unequivocally responds well to it. And if they don't respond well to it, you just move on. But this is a lesson for networking. Like, networking is not shaking hands and I need to give you my business card. It's let me find out what you're passionate about and then just give you the opportunity to tell me and then work in the opportunity to share what you're passionate about. That's my number one. Like, passion is the most attractive thing from a work perspective, also like just generally in life. The other piece of advice that I'd give is to focus and invest time in being a really good communicator. Because from my perspective, at least, pretty much every opportunity that has come my way has been one that has resulted from really good communication. And my rules for good communication are yes and mentality. So just eliminate but from your vocabulary, praise in public, criticism in private. And then compliment sandwich if you need to deliver some bad news. And like just practicing those things, practice them in email, practice them verbally. It's made me a really good communicator verbally and, you know, in person, auditorially. And I think that that has been part of the success formula for me in my generalist life.
This has been fire. I cannot wait to share this episode with folks and also see you in like 3 or 4 months. We're gonna all be hanging out. It is going to be a dream. So Zach, thank you so much for coming on the GW pod, and we'll share everything so folks can connect, follow you, ask questions. And I hope to see so many of you at the Slowdown Summit. Cheers, Zach.
Millie, you're the best. Thanks.